VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And welcome to a Friday News Roundup Crosstalk today, coming your way from VCY America. I tell you, Lori has been busy copying and then whittling down these stories. There is so much here today. We have enough, it looks like, for three programs, but we're going to brief things up here just a bit and get right into the multiple issues that are going on around the nation today. And there is much. There is much. And friends, I trust that these programs just cause that burden in your heart to be praying more for this nation and toward the spiritual needs that this nation has. Certainly there's much going on, so let's get right into it today. And we're going to begin with the California fires today as our top story, as FoxNews.com reporting that investigators in California revealed last night that another seven sets of human remains have been found in the northern part of the state's campfire, bringing the total number of people killed to 63. The number of people who remain unaccounted for in the northern California area increased to 631, increased by more than 500. Some 52,000 people have been displaced. President Trump is scheduled to travel to the state tomorrow to visit victims of fires in both the northern and southern ends of the state. We encourage you to be praying. So much devastation taking place there. Will Graham, the grandson of Billy Graham, spoke with CBN News about ministry to the fire victims, saying, "We'll see some people come to know Christ, but I don't think we've ever been there when someone has said, 'No, don't pray for me.' People in times like this, they say, 'You know, I'll do anything I can. I need help any way I can.' So they'll say, 'Pray for me.'" A couple of interesting stories, and I know that there are many, but this from CharismaNews.com tells of Paul Ernest and his wife Susie, who is a Sunday school teacher. They hopped on a four-wheeler with their neighbor as flames devoured their home. The couple reportedly then took shelter behind a boulder while the fire raged around them. Paul reportedly covered Susie with his body, but the couple still suffered serious third-degree burns. "I could hear Paul and Susie screaming. I knew it was getting them pretty bad," a neighbor said. "It was terrible, a terrible sound." According to the ABC affiliate, the couple was rescued when Wright was able to flag down. This would be a neighbor, Travis Wright, flagged down a first responders. The first responders took them to a helipad and airlifted them to the burn center at UC Davis. Their lives were spared. Also an interesting story, as reported on CBN, about Doug Crowder, pastor of Magalia Pines Baptist Church, risked his life to save others as he gathered up 30 desperate residents and four church members, helping them take refuge at his church building. But as a group loaded up into a convoy of vehicles and attempted to escape the clutches of this monstrous fire, the whole place exploded, according to Pastor Crowder. He said, "We were in the driveway planning to leave. The woods exploded. The Subway restaurant across the street exploded. And on all sides of us was fire. With nowhere to turn, the crowd sprinted back into the church building, huddled together, and prayed. With a roaring sound of flames ripping through the buildings and the deafening blast of propane canisters detonating at a neighboring hardware store, the group cried out to God for protection. And quite simply, he answered. Despite the fury of the wildfire, the church building remained unscathed, and the group huddled inside and endured the entire night without suffering any injury whatsoever. Despite the entire town being leveled to the ground, the church remained standing. It will now become a beacon of hope as the small town community attempts to rebuild from the ashes. The pastor said it will be years before it's a town again, but all through that, our church will be standing and our church will be ministering. This campfire is named after the origin of the blaze in Camp Creek, California, has become the deadliest in state history. Friends, you no doubt have seen some of the videos, the horrific videos, dash cam videos of people fleeing from the area and surrounded by fire on all sides, sometimes flames consuming portions of their vehicle and crying out, "God help me, God help me." And you hear that, and my mind just went to the a future time in which We are told about the flames of hell, and no matter how loud the cries come, there will be no relief to ones who have rejected Jesus Christ as Savior. And I trust this really places a burden on your hearts to share the good news of the gospel. And if you've watched these horrific videos, friends, do not be in that position when it comes to eternity. From FoxNews.com, two utility companies in California told state regulators that each sustained outages just minutes before a pair of destructive wildfires erupted last week. Southern California Edison said an initial electric safety incident report to the California Public Utilities Commission that there was an outage on one of the electrical circuits on the Chatsworth substation in Ventura County. That's near where the Woolsey Fire broke out last Thursday. In the northern part of the state, utility company Pacific Gas and Electric notified regulators there was a problem on an electrical transmission line minutes before the campfire erupted on Thursday and destroyed the town of Paradise. The Pacific Gas and Electric Company told a Northern California woman that power lines were causing sparks on her property the day before this deadly blaze in California destroyed the town of Paradise. On Monday, firefighters declared areas surrounding power lines on Crowley's property in Oakfield Canyon a crime scene. Security guards would not even let PG&E inspectors pass at that time. Continue to be praying about these fires in California. So much devastation. So many lives have been lost. Hundreds that are missing. And many people grieving. Many people suffering from burns. People who have lost everything. It's also interesting to note in light of this, and PJ Media reports that one of the many media groups supporting ISIS operations online claimed that the deadly wildfires in northern and southern California are retribution for coalition bombings in Syria. Images circulated by the Al Ansar Media uses a photo of a burning building and misspells the state of California, but says, "Oh, America, this is the punishment of bombing Muslims in Syria," states the text. "This is Allah's punishment for you, and inshallah, you will see more fires. Praise be to Allah," they say. Well, the sources are yet being determined as to this fires, I should say, but continue to keep this situation in prayer. Let's go to the Daily Mail here on another issue today, and that's President Trump's Border Patrol is repealing, it's repealing hundreds of those who are coming to the borders. Migrants in a caravan of Central Americans arrived in Tijuana by the hundreds Wednesday, getting their first glimpse of the robust U.S. military presence that awaits them after President Trump ordered thousands of troops to the border. Harry Salinas of Honduras said he intended to wait for thousands more in the caravan to arrive and that he hoped to jump the fence in a large group at the same time to overwhelm the Border Patrol agents, saying it's going to be one against all, one against all of Central America against one, and one against Central America, all against Trump and Trump against all, he said. FoxNews.com reports more than a dozen members of the migrant caravan were arrested Wednesday night along the U.S. Tijuana border. All were arrested for trying to cross the border illegally. Separately, a fight broke out Wednesday night in Tijuana between local Mexicans and the Hondurans arriving in the caravan. The migrants complained that the locals were yelling, "Go home, we don't want you here." Members of the caravan complained to reporters that local police made no attempt to break up the fight. Agents in the Yuma sector from Fox News also said that they detained 654 people, most reportedly being family units or unaccompanied minors from Guatemala on Monday and Tuesday. Officials said that the groups of illegal immigrants are not believed to be associated with the large caravan of mostly Central American migrants that have been prompted by the military deployment. CBP said that apprehensions in the U.S. sector are up more than 150% compared to the same time last fiscal year. More than 3,600 people were apprehended in the month of October alone. And what's also interesting, as the Washington Post points out, that LGBT asylum seekers are the first to reach the U.S. border from the caravan. That's right. The front line of what President Trump calls a migrant invasion has arrived at the U.S. border, including dozens of lesbian, gay, and transgender asylum seekers from Central America. And as you go through the story, they talk about how badly they were treated in that caravan going up toward the border. From the Gatestone Institute, the United Nations, in a non-binding agreement that almost all UN member states will sign at a ceremony in Morocco in early December, is making migration a human right. The finalized text of the agreement, the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration, although officially non-binding, puts immigration firmly on the global scale here, on the global agenda. The UN agreement, on the other hand, notes that refugees and migrants, this is from the preamble, section 4, refugees and migrants are entitled to the same universal human rights and fundamental freedoms, which must be respected, protected, and fulfilled at all times. Migrants are evidently citizens of a new world in which all countries must spring to the assistance of anyone who has chosen to travel and reside there for whatever reason. Borders may exist in theory, but the UN, comprising nearly all governments of the world, is working hard at making them disappear in practice. Isn't that interesting? I mean, the UN member states that migration is a human right. Let's turn to some other issues going on. Let's see. This is from The Hill. Senator Lindsey Graham poised to become the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee after Senator Chuck Grassley announced Friday that he would step down. That was an announcement earlier today that he would step down to take over the chairmanship of the Finance Committee. The shuffle would put Graham, a close ally of President Trump's, who made headlines this fall with a forceful denunciation of Democrats during Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation hearings, in charge of the panel that will now handle judicial confirmations. From the Washington Free Beacon, President Donald Trump has announced Tuesday of this week he's nominated current administration regulatory czar, that would be Naomi Rao, to fill Brett Kavanaugh's former seat on the D.C. Court of Appeals. President Trump first interviewed Rao for the position in late October. The Department of Justice actively began vetting her last Friday. Rao is 45 years old, currently the administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, the organ of the executive branch responsible for overseeing all major regulations made by the other departments. I'm sure there will be more information forthcoming here about Naomi Rao. From FoxNews.com, the Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel issued an opinion Wednesday supporting President Trump's appointment of Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general, despite criticism from Democrats who've been questioning his qualifications to oversee the Russia investigation. In its opinion, the Office of Legal Counsel said that the president's appointment of Whitaker to replace former Attorney General Jeff Sessions was consistent with the Federal Vacancies Reform Act. There's been a lot of opposition against this appointment, and The Justice Department legal counsel did give forth their opinion that despite the criticism, that there is not a conflict of interest here. We're going to take a quick break on this News Roundup Friday today, and we'll be back with additional stories. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are we making any progress with a creationist view of the unborn?
Yes, it seems we are, Chris, although there's positive and negative steps being taken. More and more people are being educated on the personhood of the unborn child and the need to protect it. Even efforts to clone humans are helping in the sense that there's much scientific evidence now for the unique personhood of the fertilized egg. Unfortunately, this doesn't always carry the day with legislatures and judges, for they often rule that such a person has no individual rights and can be aborted. We yearn for a day when even the courts go back to Genesis for their thinking.
Thank you, Dr. John.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
It's a News Roundup Friday in Crosstalk here on the VCY American Network. Just before we continue some stories here, a quick update on our project for Sudan, our missions project, building the studio building for Nehemiah Trumpet Call 97.3 Radio in South Sudan. Just new pictures arrived yesterday. We have posted them on our site at vcyamerica.org. When you get to that page, you'll scroll down until you see the you'll see the big word Sudan there, and look at the latest pictures as they are now putting tiles on the floor, glass in the window, and you'll see in the windows there of the building. But you'll see the continued development. It's their hope and plan that by the end of 2018, that the building will all be complete. But look at the latest pictures at vcyamerica.org. Scroll down to Sudan. And I trust that will be a blessing to you. Again, thanks to so many Crosstalk listeners helping to fund this studio that is being built for the purpose of advancing the gospel over the airwaves in southern Sudan. And what a ministry it has had and will continue to have thanks to your support for this special missions project. As we turn back to some of the news today, let's see, from Alex Newman at thenewamerican.com, he reports that the United Nations is seriously stepping up its campaign to undermine free speech, online freedom, and a surge in opposition to globalism worldwide. Yeah, they're talking about banning nationalist populism, pointing to what it calls international law against racism and intolerance. The UN is demanding a global crackdown on fundamental human rights, as well as what is described as nationalist populism. It, in particular, the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment must go. As part of the attack, political and economic ideas that the UN hates, populism, a concern about corrupt elites, nationalism, individual liberty, borders, and more, are also now officially in the UN's crosshairs. Basically, opposition to globalism and open borders is now racism that must be crushed by government, according to the arguments made in a new UN report to the UN General Assembly and the UN Human Rights Council. Christians and conservatives have a giant UN bullseye painted on their back. Friends, do you know what a change in administration would mean as it relates to a president that would bow and kowtow to the UN in light of these types of things that are being advanced by the United Nations? Truly amazing. No borders whatsoever. That's what the UN, you see, they want world government, a one world government. Haven't we heard about that sometime before? And isn't that what's projected, prophesied for the future? FoxNews.com tells us a Trump-appointed judge ruled in favor of CNN's Jim Acosta today, allowing the network's star reporter to temporarily regain access to the White House press credentials that he had. The judge, Timothy Kelly, said, I will grant the application for the temporary restraining order. I order the government reinstate the pass. Judge Kelly's decision is temporary, and further hearings are expected to take place in the next few weeks to determine whether or not yanking the credential violated CNN and Acosta's First and Fifth Amendment rights. Now, keep in mind, CNN has numerous reporters that are at the White House, not just Mr. Acosta, who behaved very rudely, and we played the clip last week here on this program, but nonetheless, a temporary restraining order allowing the press pass to be returned as the situation continues to unfold and develop. Also, Jeff Flake is letting his position be known once again. You know, there's some rumors that he might even run against President Trump for the presidential Republican nomination in 2020. Well, retiring Arizona Republican Jeff Flake from FoxNews.com on Wednesday vowed to pull support for all federal judicial nominees, including 21 pending in the Judiciary Committee and 32 awaiting a vote on the Senate floor, unless the Senate's GOP leadership permits consideration of legislation to expand protections for Special Counsel Robert Mueller's job. Isn't that interesting? Republican Jeff Flake saying, I'm not going to vote anymore on any more Trump appointees until we give some protections for the special counsel. He's been going at it for 18 months now, folks. Also from Fox News, Michael Avenatti's rise to fame may have come to a juddering halt after this Wednesday arrest on suspicion of domestic violence, the latest setback for the embattled lawyer just 8 months after bursting onto the national spotlight with the Stormy Daniels case. Well, the lawyer was arrested after a woman whose name remains unknown filed a domestic violence report on Tuesday, leading to his arrest on Wednesday. He's denied the allegations of domestic violence and was released after posting $50,000 bond and has said he is looking forward to the investigation clearing his name. Even though Avenatti denies the accusations first reported by TMZ, the fallout has been immediate, with Vermont Democrats canceling two appearances with the lawyer this weekend, including that even Democrats are fed up with the media-savvy lawyer and the controversies surrounding him. Avenatti's reputation began to suffer after spreading outlandish claims of sexual wrongdoing against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh in the wake of allegations brought by California professor Christine Blasey Ford and Deborah Ramirez. Well, it sounds like this is coming back to bite him now with accusations against him. Oh, my. WND.com. Many Democrats in the midterm elections campaign on a plan for a single-payer health care system they call Medicare for All. Medicare for All. It was endorsed by former President Obama. But when the CEO of the Democratic National Committee was asked how the plan would be funded, she didn't have an answer, the Washington Times reported. The answer to the question of how to pay for Medicare for All, Nando said, is, I don't know how we're going to get there, but these are all big conversations that we need to be engaged in. By the way, folks, the estimated cost is more than $30 trillion, WND.com reports. House Minority Leader, this is from CNSNews.com. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told a news conference yesterday that she is celebrating a great victory for the Democratic Party, but more importantly, for the American people. She said, every place I go, people say, and not just even go, just coming in and in every means of communication, they're saying, thank you for saving America. And I convey that gratitude to my colleagues, to the grassroots people who were so effective in getting out the vote, and particularly to our candidates. She said, every place I go, people say, thank you for saving America. By the way, townhall.com tells us the Democrats just picked up another seat in Maine's 2nd Congressional District after lawmaker Jared Golden prevailed over Representative Bruce Poliquin, bringing their new level to plus 35 in the House. But the contest in Maine was especially intriguing because for the first time in the United States, that should warn you right there, shouldn't it? For the first time in the United States, election officials used ranked choice voting. Poliquin had sued the Secretary of State to prevent this process from happening because before the ranked choice count, he was up by 2,000 votes. But now that they put that into place, he has now lost the election. Lost the election. This is a new way of voting in which all candidates are ranked on a ballot, made its national debut in the U.S. House and Senate races in Maine. Under the system, a candidate wins with a majority of first place votes. And that's what he got. But if there's no majority, then the last place candidate's second place votes are reallocated to remaining candidates, and the computerized process can be repeated until finally there's a winner. And even though he led with 2,000 votes before this process began, all of a sudden lost the race. Interesting. Let's move on to Florida. From Breitbart, Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner ordered the first ever statewide recount in the U.S. Senate race yesterday after a machine recount tallied over 8.3 million votes cast in the 2018 midterm election, according to reports. Unofficial results posted on the Florida Secretary of State's website show that Republican Ron DeSantis is virtually assured of winning the nationally watched governor's race over Democrat Andrew Gillum. Florida finished a machine recount yesterday that showed Gillum without enough votes to force a manual recount. However, we understand that the manual recount is going on for the Senate. This is from the Daily Caller. A federal judge ruled against Republican Florida U.S. Senate candidate Rick Scott yesterday by mandating that voters whose ballots were rejected because of a signature mismatch must be given the chance to verify their ballots. Now, something's wrong when signatures don't line up, don't they? U.S. District Judge Mark Walker's ruling that gave more than 4,000 votes voters until 5 p.m. Saturday to verify their ballots did not fully satisfy Scott's Democratic rival, Senator Bill Nelson, either. Democrats had asked Walker to discard Florida's signature match law. The ruling applies to certain uncounted mail-in and provisional ballots in 45 of Florida's 67 counties, according to the Wall Street Journal. Interesting. Also, from Breitbart, Florida Democrats urge voters to submit absentee ballots after Election Day using an official form that had been altered to make it look like they were doing so within the legal deadline, hoping a judge would later allow the votes. That attempt to add Democratic votes, which critics say is possible election fraud, was reported yesterday morning by Anna Sabalos of the Naples Daily News, who notes that the scheme had already been reported to federal prosecutors. Can you believe that, folks? Submitting absentee ballots and changing, altering the forms to make it look like they were doing so within the legal deadline. We had on the other day from, David Rubin. David Rubin, the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. And he talked about a potential early election for Israel, and it looks like that's going to happen. Because Israel's coalition is likely over, reports the IsraelNationalNews.com, as the coalition is falling apart, and coalition heads are going to be meeting this Sunday to agree on a date for new elections. Some potential dates are March 12th, March 5th, or as early as February 26th for new elections in Israel. That is certainly a matter of prayer. Also, an interesting story that coming to us indicates, this is from United with Israel, about a half hour before Hamas's TV station, the Gaza Strip, was bombed by Israel, the station was broadcasting a music video repeatedly announcing death to Israel. The video shows footage from terror attacks and scenes from funerals and burials of Israeli terror victims. The words "death to Israel" flash in Hebrew on the screen as the Arabic song focused on the message. That Hamas TV broadcast, a song calling for the killing of Israelis and Jews, is not surprising. Such music videos are common on Hamas's Al-Aqsa television, as Palestinian Media Watch has documented over and over and over. Death to Israel, death to Israel. From CNSNews.com, a UN General Assembly committee will on Friday endorse 9 resolutions critical of Israel, but for the first time in more than 2 decades, the United States will change its position from abstain to no when a resolution on the Golan Heights is put to a vote. Signaling that decision, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley in a statement yesterday described the annual resolution as useless. The resolution does nothing to bring any parties closer to a peace agreement, she said. The United States will vote no. The General Assembly resolution entitled "The Occupied Syrian Golan" has passed every year since 1993, and every year since 1996, the U.S. has abstained, leaving Israel alone to oppose the measure, which passed that year by 153 votes to 1. Israel has been the lone no vote every year since then, with the exception of 2017, when the tiny Pacific island of Palau joined it. As it does every year, the resolution calls on Israel to return to the strategic ridge that it had controlled since 1967 and annexed in 81 to Syria. It demanded that Israel stop its repressive measures against the population of the occupied Syrian Golan. The U.S. will vote no. We'll be right back.
The Bible says that life is but a vapor that's here for a short time and then vanishes away. Scripture also says, "It's appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment." Have you ever wondered what happens when you die? In the book, What Happens After Life, author Ron Rose provides a survey of the Bible's teachings about the afterlife. He tracks the destiny for those who know Christ as Savior, and the destiny for unbelievers. He addresses numerous topics, such as the immediate state after death, believers and the judgment seat of Christ, unbelievers and the Great White Throne Judgment, the new heavens and a new earth, the new Jerusalem, and so much more. He even tackles the question of what happens to infants, young children, and those mentally disabled as it relates to eternity. What Happens After Life is available for a donation of $15 or more by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Well, I feel a sense of accomplishment. I think I've gotten through 25% of the stories that I brought in my stack here today. And, let's continue with a few more before we open some phone lines here today, because there's so many important issues that are going on and matters to keep you informed on across the nation. Breaking news came forth this week from Ohio. From LifeSiteNews.com, the Ohio House of Representatives voted Wednesday to pass legislation that would ban the vast majority of abortions upon detection of a fetal heartbeat. House Bill 258 would ban committing an abortion on any preborn baby with a detectable heartbeat, except in cases of a substantial and irreversible physical threat to the mother. Any physical that physician that would violate the statute would face up to a year in prison. Preborn babies' hearts finish forming around 7 to 8 weeks into pregnancy. They cleared the House on a vote of 58-35. That's not veto-proof. But it now goes to the overwhelmingly Republican state Senate, where Senate President Larry Obhoff says that he has the votes to pass it, the Cincinnati Inquirer reports. He hasn't decided whether or not to hold a vote, however, because the bill is opposed by the governor of Ohio, who purports to be pro-life, John Kasich, but understands that he's opposed to this. Gotta kill them little ones. It's tragic, folks, what's going on. Tragic. As we look at another story here from LifeNews.com, Lena Wen took over as the CEO of the largest abortion chain in America this week. She told The Guardian that she wants to see the Planned Parenthood abortion business grow. There is huge unmet need across the country, and she said it is our moral imperative to provide care for all those who need us. She said, I plan to expand our services and expand our reach. A moral imperative to kill babies? A need to expand services and expand reach to kill more innocent human life? Also from LifeNews.com, medication abortions are far more dangerous than surgical abortions, said former Planned Parenthood Clinic Director Abby Johnson. She told that to the Daily Caller News Foundation. Medication abortions are significantly riskier than surgical abortions because there are follow-up appointments that are required and a lot of women do not follow up afterwards, explaining that the majority of deaths occur after, quote, retained products of the fetus still in the uterus become septic. Also from LifeNews.com, abortion activists are criticizing the Mississippi governor, Phil Bryant, for being white and caring about unborn black babies who are aborted. On Monday, Bryant held a press conference with National Right to Life President Carol Tobias and U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, where he mourned the loss of so many unborn babies to abortion in the black community. He said, "See in my heart, I'm confused about where the outrage is about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted. No one wants to say anything about it. No one wants to talk about that." Well, abortion activists quickly responded by calling him a misogynist, a racist. Mississippi Reproductive Freedom Fund Executive Director Lori Bertram Roberts called Bryant's heart for unborn babies disgusting and vile. "And I absolutely think it's racist," she said. No one from the anti-choice movement almost never frames white women who have the most abortions in the country as having committed genocide. It's a specific charge that only lodge at black women. It's a specific type of shaming and stigmatizing. Well, white women do have the most abortions in the U.S., ladies and gentlemen, but statistics indicate black women have a much higher rate of abortions for their population. According to census data, African Americans make up about 13% of the U.S. population, but account for 30% of the abortions. The problem is disturbingly evident in New York City, where the state data there shows that more black babies are aborted than are born. Breitbart.com tells us the Scottish education system is to become the first in the world where primary and secondary schools are required in the curriculum to promote LGBT lifestyles and identity. The report that Scottish Education Secretary John Swinney told the Scottish Parliament, quote, Scotland is already considered one of the most progressive countries in Europe for LGBTI equality. I'm delighted to announce that we will be the first country in the world to have LGBTI inclusive education embedded within the curriculum, stressing that the changes will apply to all Scottish state schools with no opt-outs. The minister said, quote, I am aware that some may say that the LGBTI inclusive education could undermine the values of their faith or beliefs. He said, I do not take this view. But Simon Calvert, deputy director of the Christian Institute, said in a statement that there are a diversity of beliefs about LGBT issues in Scotland. The approach adopted by the Scottish government assumes that there's only one acceptable view. What this means is that children from families who do not share this commitment to radical LGBT policies will be made to feel isolated in their schools. LGBT activists are often highly intolerant of traditional religious views and the people who hold them. Scotland, boasting of their LGBT equality embedded throughout their curriculum. This is from LifeNews.com. Upset parents have been flooding a Florida school district, Sarasota area, Florida, flooding them with complaints about a graphic sex education video that was shown to their students last week. The abortion giant Planned Parenthood created the video. Fox News 13 reports that the video was, I'm not even going to tell you what's in this video, folks. It's so graphic, I don't even want to share the details. But let me tell you this, the video was shown to high school students at Sarasota School District in Florida last week without parents' knowledge, without parents' consent. Students in the English literature class at Pineview High School reportedly watched the video November 7th during a Safe Place and Rape Crisis Center presentation. School board member Eric Robinson said school officials have been flooded with emails, phone calls, and other messages complaining about the graphic video. As an adult, it can be hard to watch without being uncomfortable. I can imagine how a teenager would watch, Robinson said. Again, here we have another school district, this time Sarasota. No notice or knowledge to parents showing this graphic video. From the Daily Wire, the Detroit School Board voted Wednesday to open consideration into whether a handful of DPS scholars should have their offensive name changed, including Benjamin Carson High School of Science and Medicine, named for former presidential candidate, accomplished surgeon, and HUD Director Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson. Well, the board will seek comment over the next several months on whether to change Carson High, named after Dr. Ben Carson, before he became active in politics, as well as before he became an ally of President Trump, something the Detroit School Board apparently does not appreciate. Well, it's interesting. We've got a Barack Obama school here in Milwaukee. One of the most liberal school systems in the country wants parents to know that boys and girls are built differently, Peter LaBarber writes in AmericansForTruth.com. A liberal school district wanting parents to know boys and girls are built differently, that is, except when truth is not politically convenient. He's talking about the Fairfax County, Virginia School Board announcing an upcoming workshop for parents. It's called Jack's Brain, Jill's Brain, Gender Differences and Why They Matter. The workshop will feature child psychologists discussing how girls and boys learn differently. Apparently, rapidly emerging research shows that the brains of females and males are developmentally, structurally, and functionally different. But do they mean this? After all, this is a school board that voted to teach children that biological sex is meaningless. Last spring, by a vote of 10-2, the nation's 10th largest school district made a search and destroy mission through its 80 hours of sex ed per student. 80 hours of sex ed. Every reference to human beings having biological sex of male or female was removed. Children are now taught that sex is assigned at birth and subject to change. But now they're holding workshops for parents that boys' brains are different than girls' brains. CBN is reporting in the latest effort to push forward an LGBTQ agenda in education, the Washington, D.C. School District will become the first school district in the nation to let families select non-binary rather than male or female when indicating the gender of their children on enrollment forms. The policy is set to go into effect for the 2019 school year, according to the Washington Post. Non-binary is a term used to describe people who do not consider their gender identities strictly male or female. Let's open our phone lines here today. I've talked a lot. There's so much more. Maybe half the stack, but our number here is 800-733-9829. If you'd like to comment on any of these stories here today or other current news events, 800-733-9829. Peter LaBarbera also reporting, by the way, that Chad Griffin, the president of the world's largest LGBTQ lobby group, Human Rights Campaign, stepping down next year. It turns out there's some resentment, he reports, about grassroots gay activists at HRC's enormous salaries and spending priorities. Well, Peter LaBarbera writing on that at AmericansForTruth.com. From LifeSiteNews.com, if you've been wondering just how far the media will go in accepting the ludicrous premise of the transgender movement, consider this recent headline from Canada's largest newspaper, the Toronto Star. Transgender woman gets 18-month sentence for sexually assaulting a daughter. The 33-year-old, the victim's biological father, had pleaded guilty to crimes that took place in 2013 when the girl was just three. But he then actually underwent a sex change in order to become a she. Of course, now that he has become a she, this sexual predator, even though he's still a he, the sexual predator can now be sent off to prison for ladies, which has the dual benefit of being full of women, which as this biological father is not, and not being full of men who have a reputation for treating sexual predators that get locked in with them, very, very badly. The jail sentence will get spent in a women's prison rather than a male prison. And from the New York Times, Jeff Rohr, drafted in the second round by the Dallas Cowboys in 1982 as the first known former or current NFL player to be part of a same-sex marriage. He was a linebacker with the Cowboys from 1982 to 87, and now to be part of a same-sex marriage. Well, let's go to the phone lines here today on Crosstalk. We're going to begin in South Dakota. Hi, Guy. You're on the air.
Jim. You mentioned a town in Northern California. I wanted to give you a correction on that. The name of the town is called Magalia.
Thank you.
And also the fact that I used to live in the area, I noticed that a college that I had graduated from, Butte College on Pinch Road, is basically ground level now. It's unfortunate that that entire area has basically been turned to ashes. So my prayers and everybody else for those who are suffering under those circumstances.
Yeah, and the circumstances are very, very tragic and so much devastation. Thank you, Guy. I appreciate your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see. We are just 20-some seconds away from a break, and so I don't want to butt into our next caller here, so we'll be picking up our next caller right after our break. By the way, our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Let me quick get this in for our Kansas listeners. The governor-elect of Kansas, Laura Kelly, said in a news conference on November 8th that she will try to block enforcement of a new law that protects religious adoption agencies from being forced to place children in homes that violate their beliefs. It was the Adoption Protection Act, allows adoption agencies with sincerely held religious beliefs to refuse to place children in LGBTQ homes. The governor-elect wants to block that law from going into effect. We'll be back in just a minute here on Crosstalk, our number 800-733-9829. Stay with us, back in just a minute.
For the Worldview Week in a Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewradio.com. An EMP attack could put a nation in complete darkness, shutting down their power grid and all their critical infrastructure. In fact, congressional studies by scientists reveal that 90% of Americans would be dead within 1 year if an EMP attack were successfully carried out from coast to coast in America by a nuclear weapon being detonated above the United States of America, creating an EMP effect. Right now, we know for a matter of fact that North Korea and Iran have super EMP. What's also interesting is the nations that have protected against EMP are in the process of doing so include Russia, China, North Korea, South Korea, the United Kingdom, Israel, and Taiwan. What do all those nations have in common? Almost all of them are mentioned in Bible prophecy. Those are the nations listed in the scriptures that will be here for the end times. America is not listed. Has America been taken out by an EMP while those nations had protected their critical infrastructure?
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. It's a News Roundup Friday day today. And, wow, we're going over to Birmingham, England, our good friend Robert. Robert, good to have you back in the program. It's been a while.
Hello, Jim. Good evening from Britain. Good afternoon to you in the USA.
Yes.
One of the issues that is hitting the headlines, of course, for Britain is about leaving the EU. And it is becoming very much of a spiritual issue as well because of the way that things are going. And it's very interesting how some of the German people, we have, for example, a German man who is active as an evangelist in Birmingham with the Birmingham City Mission. And a lot of the German people that have an interest in Britain, the Christians, say that Britain needs to leave the EU. And it's interesting, it's that perspective, and very much of a Christian perspective. So the main point of my call is to say to those of you in the Crosstalk listenership that pray for Britain, please pray that the situation will be resolved and that we will not be end up being tied to the EU.
Yeah, it's really become an issue, and I know there's just great frustration with the Prime Minister there as well. That and then we're also seeing in London the increase of knife attacks that are taking place,
yes.
Islam spreading across the nation,
yes.
And a lot of devastating issues hitting your area.
Yes, you know, things are very there's one man who attends my church, and some people look down on him because he's, let's say, lower IQ than most. But he commented to me the other day, the big problem we've got, Robert, is that we're not praying like we should.
Amen.
And, he put his finger on the issue, and there was a prayer conference at the beginning of September with very much of a focus on things relating to the EU. And they read out at that conference a letter from a German businessman who said that when the people were praying about the outcome of the referendum 2.5 years ago, a lot of Christians in his group were praying for Britain to stay in the EU. And then as they prayed, God showed them that they should be praying for Britain to leave the EU. So that's what they ended up praying for. And again, you know, this conference was people gathering in London. It clashed with something I'd got here in Birmingham. And they were specifically praying that the situation would be resolved and that we would have a true Brexit, a true leaving the EU and not be tied, as this present plan that Theresa May is putting forward seems to be, tying Britain to the EU.
Well, Robert, thank you for the call and the report.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
And please pray for us.
God bless you, Robert. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Let's go to Kenneth in Chicago, Illinois. You're on the air, Kenneth.
Hi. I'm just appalled at my nation and the way the school system is going all over the country. And I know how it is in Chicago. But their growth thing is just really way out of hand. But I like to put a biblical spin on it. Genesis 6 tells you about the time man has come before God. But if you look at our society today, and this is Sodom and Gomorrah at its best. And this is unfortunate that our children and my grandchildren have to endure this.
Yeah.
What is your take on it?
Well, yeah, it is indeed what we're seeing is this indoctrination taking place all throughout the public education system. It is the LGBT has been advancing. I mean, over a decade ago, we were warning about even in the Milwaukee public schools about an LGBT advisory committee and all the recommendations that they were making for transforming our schools and the libraries and introducing it all throughout the curricula. It's not just that issue, but we are seeing such a secularistic mindset put through, humanistic. We are seeing the push of Islam taking place through our school district today, whereas Christian values and we've had schools that have banned the colors of red and green at Christmas time because of their connotation to Christmas. We've got some big troubles going on within that public education system.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call here, Kenneth. Appreciate it from Chicago. And we're going next to Laura in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on the air. Hello, Laura. You're on the air. Okay, don't have Laura. Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Okay, thanks for all setting us on fire and jumpstarting us with a real nice big placard billboard I made about a lot of baby pictures and a picture of the babies all in the car. If I wasn't born, if I was out of here, and just some beautiful pictures for pro-life was out at the clinic and got a lot of positive, but then all of some negative with the bad hand gesture, the face. So it was open-air Bible preaching after the Bucks game, street preaching, Bible and gospel tracts. I can't solve all America's problems for the last 10 years to the Spanish people while they're over the borders here. And what was I going to say? And then a sign I also use, two churchgoers don't know Jesus if not born again. I hold out in the streets in Wauwatosa and all that. And with the big placard, all thanks to you guys. Thanks for motivating us. God bless you.
Okay, Mike, have a great day. Thanks for your call here today as well. Friends, critical issues that are being faced before us, I would like to make this known to our Wisconsin listeners as well, as coming to us from channel3000.com out of Madison, WISC. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is suing the Wisconsin Department of Justice over the constitutionality of a recently implemented employee chaplaincy program. They filed the lawsuit in Dane County Court, alleges that the program that's been created by the Wisconsin's Attorney General, Brad Schimmel, actively excludes secular mental health professionals. Six unpaid chaplains are involved in the program, directed by a paid chaplaincy coordinator. And Freedom From Religion Foundation said it sets up a religious test as a condition for employment. Folks, that's what a chaplain does. That's all the time for the program today, folks, but much going on. And again, we encourage you to be in prayer for our nations and our nation. And as Robert asked, prayer for Britain and the world is in turmoil. This world needs Jesus. And certainly, as we heard earlier from Sharam about the need for evangelism, spreading the good news of the gospel, I trust that you are letting your light shine for the Lord Jesus Christ. Thanks for joining us today and all this week. The Lord's Day is coming up. I trust you'll be in a Bible-preaching, Bible-believing local church. It's critical. We thank the Lord for churches that are proclaiming the Word of God. Thanks for listening to Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.